turning astray of the path that was left long ago. All we leave behind, time after time, is a legacy with nothing to show. Now our country is lost, and it's not without cost, for there's many who struggle every day. And I think that it's time we start crying for our nation and bow our heads and pray. If today you lost your life.
Hey everyone, this is Steve Donahue with the Legacy of Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. Today's episode is number 100. We've reached the mile mark of 100 episodes now. Real excited about that, and hopefully the next 100 will be even better than the first 100. And today's is actually going to be an introduction to permaculture from a biblical worldview. And some of you have probably heard me talk a little bit about permaculture. You know that as one of my tenets is to emphasize permaculture as a way to have environmental stewardship and to ensure that the next generation has as many resources or more than we have currently. And I believe permaculture is a way of doing that. But unfortunately, permaculture sometimes has a bad reputation because of the way in which it is perceived sometimes. And so I'm going to look at it today, and I'm going to look at it from a biblical worldview, as you might expect. And so it should be a good show for you. Stay tuned for that. Before we do that, I want to take care of a little bit of introductory material. First of all, make sure that you're following us on all the various social media. You can do that on the right column. There'll see a place where you can do that on the website. Make sure also that you're a registered user. I appreciate all those of you who are doing that. We're growing in the listeners, growing in those who are registered users. That enables you to have access to the comment section. It also enables you to be notified anytime there is a change to the website. So whether there is a new podcast or new blog post or new video or whatever I might put up there, you will be notified through me email. That way you can stay on top of what changes are taking place, and you don't have to keep referring back to it every day to see what is new. You'll be able to notify that through email. So that's a great way to manage your time effectively. That's, of course, free. And then I want to encourage you also to take a look at all of our affiliates. We have several different affiliates that we emphasize here with the Legacy Podcast because they have areas of expertise that we focus on here. And I focus on each of two of those each podcast. Today's first one is U.S. Legal Forms. The reason I like U.S. Legal Forms is because they are the best place I know of online to be able to acquire the necessary legal documents to have in place to build and leave a legacy. For example, everyone should have a will, power of attorney, advanced medical directive, no matter how big or large or small your estate might be. And the best way I know of getting those is through U.S. Legal Forms. I think they're about $50 for a husband and wife couple. And you can access that paperwork, fill it out, and get it notarized, and put it in a safe place. And you are on your way to being able to be responsible with your estate for the next generation. Of course, there's all kinds of other items you can do as well. There's incorporations of businesses. There's many other things you can do through U.S. Legal Forms. So check them out. Second up is Liberty Classroom. I love Liberty Classroom. I've made my way now through both sections of the Western Civilization course. I finished that up last week, and then I started with the U.S. History course, and that also is just a phenomenal course, looking at it from the perspective of a revisionist history. A lot of times what we hear in school, a lot of times what I heard in the public schools growing up, was not really, it was a skewed history. As many histories are biased, it certainly is biased in favor of the state, biased in favor of, North in the concept of the U.S., and biased sometimes even against Western civilization. And so these actually take a look at it from the perspective of being positive toward those events that did take place in Western civilization that created the culture that we currently live in, as well as in the United States, those things that maybe have been missed or brushed over because of a bias in the media or a bias in the written record. So it's just a phenomenal, in addition just to learning all the regular history and the various events and peoples. And so check that out. There's also a logics course. There's also a introduction to Austrian economics, which if you're not familiar with that, Austrian economics is basically the free market school of economics. And you can get all of that for less than $100, and you can access those. They have quizzes, they have videos, audios, downloadable PDFs. They've got all kinds of resources for you there, additional readings, and you won't want to miss that Liberty Classroom. And then finally, if you like the show and you want to support the show, the best way of doing that is by becoming a Legacy Partner. You can become a Legacy Partner for $30 a year. With that, you have access to our exclusive members-only discounts on the website, and you can check that out there. And you are also able to support the show at less than $30 a year, and that helps pay for web hosting, helps pay a little bit for some of the things that we are involved with time-wise. And so I appreciate your contribution there. That takes care of the introductory segments. Let's go now. Let's take a look at an introduction to permaculture, and more particularly what I'm going to focus on here is I'm going to look at the prime directive of permaculture, and I'm going to look at the three ethics of permaculture and compare them from a biblical worldview and how we might be able to relate to them. I want to just begin by quoting from one of the founders and of permaculture, Bill Mollison. In 1991, he said this: "Permaculture is not a fixed system. It is not a gardening association or an architect's group or farmers' federation. It does not tell people what to do. It does not say what to plant when and where. Rather, it encourages people to think, to observe, and to plan. It encourages people to live in harmony with nature, to imitate and learn from nature." And so that is, in a nutshell, not so much a definition of permaculture. The definition of permaculture would be permanent. It comes from the idea of two words, permanent culture, and carries the idea of sustainability among people and sustainability among resources. And but nonetheless, that is a good description of permaculture and the way in which it thinks, or the way in which the people involved in permaculture ought to think. The prime directive for permaculture is fantastic, and this is the prime directive of permaculture. It says the only ethical decisions is to take responsibility for our own existence and that of our children. Now, is that not just a perfect definition in relationship to building a legacy of abundance? Being able to take responsibility for ourselves and the existence of our children. In other words, being able to live life abundantly now and to be able to pass on that abundance so that future generations might be able to also experience them. And that's the prime directive of permaculture. So certainly there is no inconsistency there when it comes to what we believe here on the Legacy Podcast. Now, there are three ethics that are described among permaculturists. There is some debate about the third one, and I'll get to that here in a moment. But the first of the three ethics of permaculture is earth care. Now, the idea of that is to care for the earth and all living and non-living things. That would include animals, plants, water, air, land, the environment, all of the things that make up what we know of as the earth, earth care. And, you know, this was the fundamental original mandate given to man in the Garden of Eden. In Genesis chapter 2, verse 15, God commands Adam to tend and to keep the garden in which he is placed. And the two words there, tend, carries the idea of to work in or to serve in. And the word keep is to the idea of keeping guard over and to watch over it, in a sense of being able to observe it and to make sure that it is okay in its processes. And so the idea then is that it's not to be ruined, it's not to be extracting all that we can in one generation, leaving nothing for the next generations, but rather it is to care for it and to pass it to descendants better than what we received it. Now, it doesn't take long to see that this has been a problem in the history of man for a long time. To rape and pillage, basically the earth. And so earth care is fundamental, not only to building a legacy, but it's fundamental to permaculture and to permaculture ethics. The tragedy is that many conservative Christians have reacted negatively to environmentalism. And, you know, there are some reasons for that that we'll get to in a moment, but it's a real tragedy because Christians really should be at the forefront, particularly those who are Bible-believing Christians ought to be at the forefront in environmental stewardship, because it is through that environmental stewardship that we see God's original mandate to man to work and to care for the earth. And part of the reaction that has come as a result of the environmental movement is that there has been a pendulum shift, and there is this idea that if environmentalists agree with it, then we can't, because some of the environmentalist perception is wrong in other areas. And of course, that's throwing the baby out with the bathwater, and should not be the case. But sometimes environmentalists and some on the left are so willing to place animals and trees or other living things above that of man and property rights. And that should not be the case. But what really should be the case is that those things are cared for in the process of caring for man. Now, we'll look at the second permaculture ethic, which is people care. And certainly they're in corroboration. And so permaculture is not anti-people. In fact, it is important to care for people. And so it actually does have an appropriate perspective when it comes to the relationship between earth care and people care. And so we can have both, and we should have both. And so in Romans chapter 8, verses 19 through 22, we see that some of the change that takes place in our environment is due to the fallen nature of the environment. And this is one area where I may differ from a traditional permaculturalist in the standpoint that many of them believe that the earth itself, nature itself, is pristine and perfect. Whereas I would argue that it is not pristine and perfect, but it also is affected by the fall. And we must see those areas in which the righteousness is displayed, but then also other areas that are affected by the fall that can be redeemed by man. And actually, by doing that, we can actually bring it to a better state than nature itself. But listen to Romans chapter 8, verses 19 through 22. It says, "For the earnest expectation of creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. Because the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together until now." In other words, creation has been affected by the fall of man. And so it is not pristine. It is not perfect. There are aspects of it that we can learn from, that we can emulate, and so better the situation that we are in. But there are also areas that we can improve upon that have been affected by the fall. And then, of course, so part of that is a result of fall. So that would be the indirect result of man. But then there are some areas in which man has directly impacted the environment. And, you know, we could go on and on with a list of these, but I think of deforestation, the replacement of monocrops in that deforestation. Around here, what we find is there's a lot of hardwoods, and those hardwoods are being clear-cutted and then replanted in pines. And, of course, this has occurred in Europe. It's occurred all over the world. And we see, you know, in South American places where the Brazilian rainforests are being cut down and replaced with agricultural land or with livestock. And, you know, that can be devastating to the environment. And then also monocrop industrial agriculture. You have acres and acres of corn in the Midwest where you can go through a state and it seems like endless acres. Thousands and thousands of acres of just one crop. And that was never God's design for the planet. It was never God's design for a portion even of the planet. There is a multicultural species that needs to be developed in any one area. And when we have a monocrop such as we do in the Midwest, that is devastating to the environment. And so what we have developed by the use of modern agriculture in many ways is what can be considered like a monocrop desert, where if you go to a regular desert, all there is sand. But if you go to a monocrop desert, all there is one type of vegetation. Everything else is sprayed and killed. Everything else is destroyed or cut down. And so you have this monocrop desert, and that is certainly devastating to the environment. And then also there is, you know, man puts all these toxins into the soil and into the groundwater. We think of petroleum-based fertilizers and herbicides and pesticides, and all of these things leach out into the groundwater and eventually go into the oceans, and these toxins then begin to build up not only in the soils but also in the water. And that is devastating to the environment as well. And so, you know, I could go on and on listing all the various ways, but this is certainly contrary to the whole concept of earth care. And so what can we do? Well, start with yourself and your own personal ethic and consider ways in which you are disregarding the care of the earth and change those habits. And then look at maybe some of the habits that you do have where you can be more involved in taking care of the earth itself. So some questions you might ask is, how are you gardening? If you are gardening, of course, the best way you can preserve the land itself is by doing your own gardening and not having to transport in that food from long distances. And so, you know, consider gardening. Also, what about, where are you buying your groceries? Are you buying them locally? Or are you buying them, having been trucked in from Argentina, or that is those of us in the United States. If you're in Argentina, buy them Argentinian. Certainly considering how you're buying your food and the ways in which it is being grown, whether it's being grown using permaculture principles, sustainable practices, those kinds of things, and evaluate that. That would be also in the sense of, cattle and feedlots versus pasture-raised poultry and pasture-raised animals, sheep and goats and cows, that kind of thing. And then also ask the question, what are you doing with your waste products? And we'll get to, eliminating waste with a third ethic, but what are you doing with your waste products? Not only that is removed through plumbing, but also other waste products, recyclable material, and all the vast array of things that we acquire in our life. What are we doing with those things, and how are we putting those back to use and recycling them in the earth? And so earth care is fundamental. Now, what can a community do? Well, oftentimes when we think about community involvement in environmentalism, what ends up happening is we get more regulations, more involvement of the EPA and the USDA, and none of these things are actually helpful. I would say that they are actually not very helpful. And when you get the bureaucracy involved and you get the central planners involved, you actually go further from where you need to be in the sense of caring for the earth. So it needs to be done from a community level. But even with that, there still needs to be no more regulations. There's plenty of regulations on the books. What needs to happen is there needs to be just an enforcement of the laws that already exist that would violate personal property and private property and personal rights when it comes to that standpoint. And so obviously if someone pollutes the groundwater that you are drinking from, then they need to be held responsible for that. And so there is already laws in the books for that. They just need to be enforced. And then, of course, communities can support agriculture by having farmers markets and encouraging community support agriculture, CSAs, and those things like that. And so those are some ways in which the community can be involved, as well as some ways in which you can be involved in reference to the first ethic, which is earth care. The second ethic is people care. And this involves caring for the people, promotion of self-reliance, and community responsibility. Galatians chapter 6, verse 10 says, "Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith." And so this involves becoming more and more self-reliant. This is important because it makes us less dependent upon others. It relieves the burden of others. It enables us to be more self-contained and not to require as much resources. It fulfills the prime directive of taking responsibility for ourselves and for our children. And so becoming more self-reliant is a way of caring for people. And then also community responsibility. And again, I do not want to emphasize the idea that we are to be forced into some kind of communes or forced into some kind of community agreements or anything like that. I believe that is contrary to what is actually indicated. And so there needs to be this balance here, a balance between communism on the one hand and hermetism on the other hand. On the one side, there are those who say that we need to collectively bring everything together and we need to be responsible as a community and collectively regulate all these things. And then on the other hand, there are those who say, no, just leave me alone with my 5 acres. And I don't care about anybody else. Neither one of those really is the perspective that we need to have as Christian permaculturalists and those who want to build a legacy. And so instead, we must have personal property rights, we must have self-reliance, and we must have voluntary community activism and organizations. Notice that it's not radical environmentalism that cares for the earth above people, but nor is it the other side where we care only about the people and not about the earth. And so there needs to be a balance there. So what can we do? We'll start with your family and make sure that you are taking care of them yourself. Become more self-reliant, because the more self-reliant you become, the more independent you become, and the more you are willing to rely upon yourself and the resources that you have and not have to depend upon others or the extraction of resources from other people or the dependence upon surplus from others, but rather you will have an abundance, and then from that abundance you can then give of your surpluses to others. And that's where the next permacultural ethic comes in, and that is the third one, fair share, or often sometimes called share the surplus. And by fair share, some people would obviously come up with the understanding that there needs to be this mandatory division of everything that everyone has. And obviously, I would not hold to that. But what it does is it ensures that all forms of surplus are distributed to others instead of being wasted or hoarded. This would include money, crops, labor, information. Again, the idea is not that it is forced to have everybody have a lowering to the lowest common denominator, but rather that it is a insurance that there is no waste in the systems. Proverbs 21, verse 20 says, "There is desirable treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man squanders it all." And I'm reminded of the parable of the talents, the parable of the talents where there were the master went away and he left with his 3 servants different levels of talents. He gave to the one 5, he gave to another 3, and he gave to the another one 1. And then he came back later to see how they had progressed with those. And the one who had 5 had earned 5 more. The one who had 3 had earned 3 more. And the one who had earned 1 said that he hid it away. And basically, he hoarded it. He didn't do anything with it. Didn't recycle it. Didn't reuse it. Didn't make more from it. And of course, the Lord called this person a wicked servant. And so we are to be responsible with what has been entrusted to us, to be able to ensure that we don't waste it, but that we use what we have for actual benefit and for the increasing of the abundance of all. And so I think it's important to notice that there needs to be a surplus, and that surplus needs to be achieved. Some believe that we should only produce what we ourselves need. Well, that's not so. In fact, we should produce a surplus. This is one of the reasons why I focus on abundance and not sustainability. There are some who believe that, focusing on sustainability is important. Well, sustainability is not really what we want. We actually want abundance, which is a level beyond sustainability. Because when we only achieve sustainability, it means that we are not actually producing more. But we should actually produce more than what we had originally. And that's where abundance comes in. And so when I talk about building a legacy of abundance, what I'm talking about is being able to produce more with each progressive generation. And so we should produce a surplus. And I'm reminded of the old, I think it's an Aesop fable, but nonetheless, you'll remember the story of the goose that lays the golden egg, and the young man who is poor, and he receives the goose. And every day, this goose lays a golden egg, and this family is able to take the golden egg, and they're able to go and purchase the things that they need. And it seems like they're able to provide for their sustenance through this. But because they get greedy, they then want to dig into this goose to find the source of this gold that is coming from this goose. And in the process of destroying the goose to try to find the source of the eggs within the goose, they have killed their very source that produces them with this revenue of golden eggs. And I think what happens sometimes is people look at this and they say, well, there should be no one who is able to have a revenue source that would be able to provide for their needs in this way, and instead that we need to redistribute that from one person to the next. Well, in doing that, what you're basically doing is you're destroying the goose that lays the golden egg. And so we can't look at it from that perspective. Instead, what we must do is we must make sure that there is no waste in anyone's system, and that the surplus is reasonably allocated according to the market forces. And so this has probably been misunderstood and by many who endorse some kind of communism and Marxist philosophy, but I don't see it that way. Instead, I see this as advocating good stewardship. And a steward is not going to waste what his master has entrusted to him. He will either do one of three or any combination of these three things. First of all, reinvest the surplus. For example, if you're a farmer or a gardener and you've got an excess of Jerusalem artichokes, you can take those Jerusalem artichokes, dig them all up, or just leave them where they are, dig up some of them, and then, of course, that surplus that you've left in the ground will then be able to produce more for you the following year. Or you can dig them up and replant them in another place, and again, that surplus will be able to provide for you in the future. That's reinvesting what you currently have. If you take out all of that and eat all of it or give it all away, then you would have no seed stock, so to speak, to invest in the next generation or in the next year. And then also giving the surplus. What gardener has not had an excess of tomatoes and squash in the summertime and given them away to neighbors and friends and people in the community? And that's a part of redistributing the surplus as well in a way that is voluntary. And then exchanging the surplus for something that is lacking that you might need. For example, you might sell the surplus at a farmer's market to friends or to family, or to CSA customers or something like that. And of course, the money that you're able to generate from the production of that surplus, you are able to buy other things that you might not be able to produce self-reliantly upon your own farm or upon your own business. Or you could barter them. And really, selling is really just a form of barter. You're just bartering for a common agreed source of bartering equipment, which would be money. And but bartering does the same thing. And so you might, if you've got apples in your orchard and you produce a surplus of apples and you've canned all the applesauce that you need to can to put away and you've done everything you can with your apples and you still have an excess, you can take those apples down to your neighbor maybe who has an excess of hay, and you can exchange your apples for the hay. And then by acquiring that hay, you then are able to have fertilizer for your garden, or you're able to have the hay to feed the rabbits or the cow or the goats or whatever else you might have on there. And so by using the barter as a means of supply, you are able then to level the supply and make sure that everybody has what they need. So what can we do? Well, work at producing a surplus. Listen to the shows that I've talked about earlier with the different forms of capital. And there's eight different forms of capital. As we acquire more and more of those of capital, then we are able to have more surplus. And with that surplus, then we are able to distribute that to make abundance for all those who are involved in the negotiation. So grow our capital. The exciting thing about it is that the more permaculture designs that are in place, the more abundance will be achieved in one's life. And so there'll be more and more surplus that comes from that. And then evaluate what to exchange for your surplus. In other words, what items do you still need? What areas of service do you still need? What things are you not able to produce yourself? What things are you lacking? And then where is your area of surplus that you can then acquire those areas where you are lacking, and that through regular negotiated market means, you're able to provide an abundance for yourself and for others in that. And what can the community do? Well, the first thing is the community need not interfere in the process of value of surplus. Not to interfere in the negotiations, not to set price and price quotients, or to, it reminds me of the situation in after the hurricane in New York recently, and how the gas prices were not allowed to float up as a result of the lack of supply there. And instead, there were restrictions on the price that was to be paid at the pump. And so there was long lines, and there were people who were abusing the system. And if the gasoline companies were allowed, or the stores at least that carried the gasoline were allowed to raise the prices to meet the demand, then the supply would be regulated perfectly in the free market. But how it happens is the communities, and in this case mayors, get involved and interfere in the free regulation of surplus, and that's a problem. And so we should be allowed to have free regulation of the value of surplus, and this involves free markets because they will allocate resources and surplus appropriately. And by way of conclusion, I want to say don't hesitate to learn more about the principles, because you've heard that it was maybe anti-capitalistic or new age to be involved in permaculture. That's not so. Remove the prejudice and learn about permaculture. Certainly there are some who do not believe or understand the same as I do with regard to permaculture, and they are anti-capitalistic and anti-Christian new age, but I do not believe that was the founder's intention or their understanding. And so consider a few ways in which you can care for the earth, care for people, and share the surplus this year, and set goals in that regard for 2013. And then one final note, you cannot build a legacy of abundance if the present generation misuses the resources that we have. This is one of the tenets of building a legacy of abundance. And so we are to involve ourselves in the ethics and the principles and the prime directive of permaculture, and by doing that, we'll be able to build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. And with that, this has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy of Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?
If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? But just like the plant that withers away, we will leave many seeds behind. If today you lost your life, what would you leave behind? What would the ones around you see? What happened in the dash between your birth and death? What will you do to change your legacy? What will you do?